Not much went right for the Green Bay Packers this past weekend. The offense stalled, and the defense allowed the Broncos to erupt for 500 yards. So what went wrong, and where can the Packers improve? To answer those questions, we bring on Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Sorry for a little audio glitch at the top of the show. It's fixed. We're talking about a Green Bay Packers loss to the Denver Broncos, taking one last look back at the game and ahead, starting our look ahead to the Carolina Panthers. To do that, we have just joining us on the phone, back from the bye week, Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. Nathan, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Brian. How about you?
Very good. We're glad to have you back on the show after a brief interlude after the bye week he gave you off. But unfortunately, as far as Packers fans go, we were not speaking under the best of circumstances. The Packers look very poorly, which is atypical for them. Aaron Rodgers, of course, had, you know, didn't have a very good game. You know, 77 yards I'm not sure if that's a career low in a game that he starts, but I'm sure it's near the bottom. Where did this rank among the poorer games of Aaron Rodgers' career?
In terms of his grades, we would put it roughly on par with the Rams game. He typically has one or two games graded this low per year, so I wouldn't say it's in the bottom two or three, but it's probably bottom 10 or so games. Part of that is, yeah, he didn't do a lot of good in that game, but he also didn't do a lot of bad either. He was just very conservative with the ball, which only led to a couple inaccurate throws, and then his biggest negative was the fumble in this game. Typically, for a quarterback to get a really negative grade, that involved a lot of clear interceptions that are his fault or throws that are almost intercepted. And Rodgers didn't really have those in this game. On the plus side, he did have a couple plays that the stats wouldn't indicate are as good. Along with the passing yardage total, he did have two nice scrambles for 31 yards. So those were both nice plays out of him. He also had that third down play late in the game that should have been a first down, but Jones was then pushed back on the other side of the first down marker, so it wasn't a first down. So that's the kind of play where Rodgers doesn't get a lot of yards, but in terms of our grades, we grade him out well because he did everything in his power to make that a first down. It was just things that happened after the catch that led it to not being a first down. So Rodgers did have a couple of nice plays in this one, a couple not as good plays too, and that gave him a negative grade in total, but it wasn't as bad as being 77 yards would indicate.
Yeah, he certainly didn't get a lot of help around him, and I guess that leads me right into the next question here. A lot has been made of the Packers' inability to get open, their receivers. What did the statistics say to that end?
Yeah, obviously when you have that few catches and that few yards, you're not having a good game, and not getting open is a big part of that with Rodgers throwing accurate passes at least. So I think the biggest indicator of that is how few yards the Packers were getting after the catch. They had 42 yards after the catch total in this game, but a lot of that is six of the Packers' completions were thrown behind the line of scrimmage. Another two were thrown within 2 yards of the line of scrimmage. And when you're throwing those kind of passes, either to the running back or screen passes, you're going to get at least some yards after the catch, just since the defense isn't right on you like they would other passes. So that's where nearly all of the Packers' yards after the catch came from. Among the six completions that went beyond 2 yards in the air, the Packers had negative 8 yards after the catch, which 10 of those came on that one James Jones play that I mentioned. And then on the other 5 catches, they only had 2 yards after the catch total. So the Broncos were right on them even when they were allowing catches. And then they played a decent role of why the Packers didn't have more completion.
Another issue this week that's gotten a lot of attention has been Eddie Lacy's weight, or it was coming into the game. And, you know, I thought Eddie Lacy played pretty well, and this whole issue's been overblown. But he did he seem to be slow or impacted by, you know, his weight issue, supposed alleged weight issue at all?
Yeah, when we're watching the game, we're more looking at the result of the play. So I don't know if Lacy's issues are that his weight's making him slower, or if he has some sort of injury, or if it's something mental or whatever reason it could be. But I do know that Lacy isn't playing as well as we're used to seeing Lacy play. Throughout the year, he has yet to have a single run go for more than 16 yards, where last year he had at least a run of at least that many yards in over half of this game. And then he's only had 9 players miss tackles on his carries, which is just 31st most in the league among running backs, where last year he had 49 players miss tackles, which was 6th most. So I don't think Lacy's playing as well, and definitely the weight could be part of that issue.
The Broncos' pass rush is obviously one of the best in the NFL. So how would you say the Packers' offensive line held up against them, kind of knowing coming in that they would be a tough group to go against?
I thought they did a fine job in pass protection in this one. The 3 interior linemen allowed just 1 pressure each. They were able to hold Malik Jackson and Antonio Smith to their lowest grades as pass rushers so far this season. And then on the outside, David just allowed a sack and a hit, and Bulaga had the worst game of the group with a sack, hit, and 3 hurries allowed. But a lot of that's understandable when they're going up against Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware every play. And I think part of it is the Packers were under pressure a bit more than usual, but I think a lot of that had to do with Aaron Rodgers holding onto the ball more than he typically does, thanks to the coverage. So that made it look like there was more coverage or more pass rush, just because it was coming later in the play when typically Rodgers would have already thrown the ball. So I would say even though the Broncos were able to get some pressure, that had more to do with the coverage. And I think the offensive line did a fine job in pass protection.
Yeah, I thought they held up pretty well, too. We're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. If we turn our attention, Nathan, to the defensive side of the football, Casey Hayward, very interesting case here, because I think there's kind of been a tradition, maybe tradition's the wrong word, but there's been a history of him being graded rather favorably by Pro Football Focus. But, you know, obviously he didn't have a great game by any means on Sunday. Where did he go wrong?
Yeah, he definitely had a lot of trouble covering Demaryius Thomas in this one. Just while covering him alone, he allowed 109 yards on just 4 catches, and then also had another penalty in there. So when guarding Thomas, he didn't have a great game, but he did end up grading close to average in this one, because along with all of the bad plays that he had a lot of good ones in this one too. On one of the first few plays of the game, he had a pass defense, and then to end that first drive, Hayward was the guy in coverage on Benny Fowler, made the tackle, which forced a punt. Another 2 plays throughout the game that fell incomplete because of Hayward's close coverage. In the 4th quarter, he had another tackle, which forced a punt, and then another hit on Emmanuel Sanders, which led to an incompletion. So he definitely just had trouble guarding Thomas throughout the game, but he also made a lot of good plays to at least help make up for the bad plays he was making.
Yeah, I did think he got better as the game went on. I think the statistic is he broke, at least the NFL statistics, he broke up 3 passes, which was actually the team lead. We know Hayward didn't do all that well in covering Demaryius Thomas, but, you know, he wasn't the only one who, you know, Peyton Manning in the Broncos had over 500 yards of total offense. Who else had success against the Green Bay secondary? Or reversely, who struggled in the Green Bay secondary?
Yeah, Demaryius Randall is another one who allowed a few too many first downs, but then he also had that 4th quarter interception, which also helped redeem some of his play. And then Nate Palmer is also someone that I noticed allowed a couple first downs, whether he was the primary or secondary man in coverage, and he didn't really have anything positive to help make up for his play. And Palmer, I noticed, has started to grade out as one of the worst inside linebackers in the league, which you would expect for a team that's been at the position and then had a few injuries, but you would still like to see some improvement out of Palmer.
C.J. Anderson and Ronnie Hillman had surprisingly good games against the Packers. Who is at fault in run defense for Green Bay?
I think LaTroy Guion was the biggest problem for the Packers. Half the time when he was on the field on a run play, the Broncos were able to successfully block him and run in that direction, and Guion wasn't able to do anything about it. And then the other half the time when he was in, he just wasn't involved in the run game. Didn't really have any positive plays in the run to help make up for it. So I don't think he should be as big of a part as the Packers' defensive line rotation. Then outside of him, the starting outside linebackers didn't have great games either. And then I think it was also just a case of no one really stepping up in the run game. For example, Mike Daniels is someone that I expect to, at this point, make a couple good plays against the run, grade out, have a positively graded game against the run. And that didn't happen in this game. He was just really close to average. So it was a combination of a couple players not doing well and then everyone else playing average and no one having a good game against the run.
Fair enough. If we start to look ahead here, Nathan, to the Packers' upcoming game against the Carolina Panthers, they're taking on a team that's currently undefeated now for the second week in a row. This is going to be a fun one. Can you help me take a look at some of the strengths and weaknesses of this Carolina team?
Sure. The Panthers have a very different style of offense from the Packers, but their strengths and weaknesses are kind of in the same areas. The Panthers are in competition with the Packers for the best interior offensive line in the league, and then it's the offensive tackles that aren't quite as strong. Then both have a great inside receiving threat, with the Panthers having Greg Olsen. And then there's typically a lot of talk with the Panthers wide receivers and how they aren't very good and need to upgrade. But those players have graded out pretty close to average, just since they're consistently average in what they do. They aren't making a lot of great plays, but they also aren't making bad plays either. So Cam Newton's having a good year as well. And then probably the biggest difference is the Panthers have had a little bit better run game with Jonathan Stewart. Then the Panthers on defense, they have three really good players, which all three of them could probably make an argument for first-team All-Pros so far this year. Quan Short has been playing great against both the pass and the run. He'll be going up against the Packers' interior linemen all game, so that'll probably be one of the biggest challenges those three guys have all season. Kikui is playing is probably as good as any other linebacker in recent memory. So he's someone who the Packers will have a bit of trouble blocking. And then Josh Norman has been one of the best shutdown cornerbacks this year. He only plays on the outside, so he'll be going up against James Jones or Devontae Adams throughout the game. So I'm guessing one of those or both of those players won't have a great game. But luckily, he doesn't go into the slot, so as long as Randall Cobb stays in the slot, Cobb won't be going up against Norman. So outside of that, the Panthers have a lot of average players on defense and then just three stars that have helped the unit be one of the best units in the game.
Yeah, well, when you have three All-Pros, that's certainly, that's better than a lot of teams and arguably better than the Packers. So, Nathan, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Looking forward to break this down. Glad to have you back on after the bye, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Yeah, no problem. Enjoy the week.
Okay, take care. Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us as he does here every Wednesday on Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. As we continue on with the show,
Packers news of the day.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers over the past 24 hours, the trade deadline has come and gone in the NFL, and not surprisingly, the Packers were not involved. And what's interesting here is, I guess I wanted to go into this is, you know, it had been rumored for so long and people had kind of speculated whether the Packers should have gotten involved, that it actually, the day before the trade deadline, it comes down to it. And the San Francisco 49ers actually do trade tight end Vernon Davis. And there is so many proposed trades out there by the media, on social media, whatever. that, you know, you almost immediately dismiss 99% of them because they're just not realistic. I mean, first of all, football in general, this isn't baseball where trades seemingly happen all the time. You know, trades in football, especially, you know, ones that don't occur during the draft, you know, it's like, yeah, there's trades that happen during the draft, and they're mostly like draft picks for draft picks or whatever. You know, player trades in the NFL, they happen, but they're uncommon. And then on top of that, you know, you got the Green Bay Packers led by general manager Ted Thompson, who's probably more hesitant than most to pull off a trade. So, you know, taking those into account, it made it extremely unlikely the Packers would be involved. But I guess my comment here is that this really was kind of the 1% that made a little bit of sense. Now, obviously, I'm not sitting there. I don't know if the Packers were involved in any conversations and don't know how they went if they did. But, you know, I would not have been opposed for the Packers to get in the running for a player like Vernon Davis at tight end. Now, obviously, you're not looking for a player the age of Vernon Davis to be the long-term solution, so to speak, at the tight end position. You're looking at somebody that's going to help you, you know, win a Super Bowl in the here and now. And I think he can do that. He's going to do that for the Broncos. I think he could have done that for the Packers. And, you know, I understand the reason they're probably hesitant is, you know, you trade for a guy at midseason. The season's halfway over practically. And at this point, it's by the time he comes in and he learns the offense and he gains a rapport with, you know, not only Aaron Rodgers, but, you know, the other receivers around him and the offensive line that he's helping to block with, you know, by the time he gets fully integrated, you're at the end of the season already, and you've kind of lost half of, you know, the value that you actually brought him in there for. That's the reason you don't do it. I do think, had the Packers given up what the Broncos gave up, I could have lived with that, because I do think he upgrades the position. Here the Packers are without, you know, their receiving threats are, you know, not doing that well this season without Jordy Nelson, to say the least. And, you know, that's saying we spent a lot of time on Monday's show talking about the struggles of the offense with Luke Rodgers, and I'm not going to get into that heavily here, but I mean, you know, I was on, you know, my weekly appearance on ESPN Radio's Wausau affiliate last night, and I kind of said, you know, Richard Rodgers, the Packers' current starter at tight end, he is what he is. He's never going to be a deep threat, seam stretching tight end. He's not going to be that. You know, he's a guy who can get open. He's a guy who has good hands. But, you know, he's a guy, the yards after the catch are, that might be the worst thing about Richard Rodgers. That's not to say he can't be effective, but don't ever expect him to stretch the seam. And I do think that's something Vernon Davis can still do. Maybe not at the point he once could, but still, I still think there's enough in him to be very, very effective. And I would have been on board with the Packers pulling off that kind of trade. They didn't, obviously, but That's kind of your, you know, the trade deadline news that kind of rocked the NFL world. Kind of interesting that the Broncos also attempted, reportedly, to trade for Browns left tackle Joe Thomas. They end up running out of time, as I kind of understand it. They were kind of racing to make something work and actually doesn't. And, you know, I'm sure the Browns aren't all that disappointed that they're, you know, giving up, you know, arguably the best left tackle in the NFL, or if not the best, one of the best. So they're probably, you know, the fan base would, you know, hate losing a very good player. So they're probably not all that disappointed there in Cleveland. But anyway, there's your, what's going on in, you know, trade news in the NFL is the Packers can no longer now make a trade until the season is over. So there you go. In other Packers news, I suppose, I don't know if you want to call this news or not, but I wanted to discuss it, kind of one topic here. And what I'm going to do is draw your attention to a column that I personally wrote at 24/7 Sports, and you can go through our archives and find it there. It shouldn't be hard to find. About the Packers needing to rely on speed and talent and not experience in the secondary. And this was kind of prompted by a comment by defensive coordinator Dom Capers in the aftermath of the game. And here's what he said. And it's just one sentence here that I'm pulling a quote from. And he's talking about the loss to the Broncos and how the Packers performed, and particularly in the secondary. He said, quote, "With losing Sam Shields, it was obviously go put your most experienced group out there." And, you know, I understand there's not a whole lot the Packers could do once, you know, Sam Shields goes down. And in addition to him, Quentin Rollins, who, albeit as a backup, and he doesn't play a ton, but I mean, all of a sudden you lose two cornerbacks and you're running out of guys to even put out there. But, I don't like this mentality of go put your most experienced group out there, because what I think the Packers are doing, and there's kind of, you can argue that this has hampered them in the past. Take a look at the inside linebacker situation last year with how long they held on to guys like A.J. Hawk and Brad Jones because they were the most experienced guys out there. I think that's hampering the Packers, that mentality. I think they hang on to that a little bit too long, because even before the injury to Sam Shields, who was not in the starting lineup on Sunday? First-round draft pick Demarius Randle, not even on the field, not in the starting lineup against the Broncos. And, they have Shields and Casey Hayward as the perimeter cornerbacks. And of course, Hayward gets picked on several times. And this isn't an original thought from me, and I think most people recognize the same. Casey Hayward is not really a perimeter cornerback. Yeah, you could use him there in an emergency like they pretty much had to this past game. But, you know, he should be there in the slot pretty much all the time. He should not be a perimeter cornerback. He should totally, almost strictly, almost exclusively playing the slot, unless, understandably, they suffer two injuries or something like that. Demarius Randle needs to be out on the field, and I guess I can understand maybe the Packers were trying to preserve his health by not putting him in the starting lineup. He suffered an ankle injury during the week of the game, but as we saw, Demarius Randle was not really impacted by that injury whatsoever. He ends up, he got beat a few times too, and you're going to suffer a few lumps with his learning curve as he learns the cornerback position. This was a college safety after all. But how well has Demarius Randle played this year? Really, all things considered, he looks really, really good, and I think so does Quentin Rollins. And again, I understand he wasn't available, but once these guys get healthy, once Randle and Rollins are 100% and they are available, well, you know what the Packers starting lineup should look like in the secondary? It should be Sam Shields at one perimeter cornerback, Demarius Randle at another perimeter cornerback, and Quentin Rollins as your number one slot corner. Number one, that means Quentin Rollins coming in the nickel. That means Casey Hayward probably not coming in unless it's a dime situation. And then when it is, he's in the slot. He's not out on the perimeter. Micah Hyde played more snaps than anybody else on the entire Packers team.
Packers news of the day.
Sorry about that. Micah Hyde played more snaps than anybody else on the entire Packers team this past Sunday. When you count defense and special teams combined, well, he played the most snaps on defense. He played every snap on defense. He didn't come off the field whatsoever. And that now you add in like more than a dozen special team snap on top of that. I don't think Micah Hyde is worthy of that kind of reliance on his ability. I think he should be a backup at safety. If you know, he could be the number one backup at safety. If anything were to happen to Clinton Dix or Morgan Burnett, I have no problem with putting Micah Hyde on the field. But I don't even think he should be among the Packers' top two slot cornerbacks. I think it should be Rollins and Hayward. And then after that, if one of them were to suffer an injury, then Micah Hyde comes in at slot cornerback. He should be the punt. I like Micah Hyde on punt returns. I love him, actually. I don't think people give him enough credit with three touchdowns the past 2 years. And he hasn't busted one yet this year. And I think it's only a matter of time till he does, just because he makes such good decisions. He hangs onto that ball, and he gets north and south. I think it's only a matter of time. He's just got to make, you know, like one person miss, and he's going to be off to the races. I love what he does. You can argue maybe there's players with greater playmaking ability, better ability to bust a punt return, like, you know, Randall Cobb could. I don't think the Packers want to expose him to injury, but he's a big-time playmaker. Or, you know, Jared Aberderis, you could, you know, argue that he's a bigger playmaker. But I like Mike Ion on punt returns. Use him as a punt returner. Use him on coverage, you know, special teams coverage units. But a backup at safety and slot cornerback. And you know, I just think, you know, again, the Packers are doing themselves a disservice when Demaryius Randall and Quentin Rollins are on the sideline. You know, there's a reason these guys were the first and second round draft picks. They need to start being three down players for the Packers. You know, put Casey Hayward in the slot and get those guys out there, because you know what? They're fast too. They're faster. I don't know if they're the fastest players in the NFL. They're probably not. And you know, Sam Shields might be the fastest player on the team. But, you know, that's what got, you know, these guys exposed. Casey Hayward and Micah Hyde, Peyton Manning was picking on them. He was picking on the slowest players on the team. You know, that was the remedy for his noodle arm. You know, he knows that these guys are probably less likely to jump a pass, especially when it's going to the outside of the field, you know, where they got to really use their legs to catch up to it. You know, I just think that, you know, Packers would be better served with Randall and Rollins out there, because they've shown now that they can be playmakers. Randall with a, you know, albeit he gave up a few passes, but, you know, he showed that he didn't quit. He was the one guy who was going to give the Packers a glimmer of hope. He did that with his interception. And then a few weeks ago, Rollins coming up with two interceptions in one game. How big was that? You know, time to get these guys more involved. There's too much reluctance to put the experienced players out there, especially when it's mid-season. I understand, like, you know, you do it the season opener when they're not ready for primetime under the bright lights. But, you know, by now, these guys are ready. So there you go. There's your 2 cents on that issue that I thought was worthy of some discussion time here on the show. But if we move on here.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this Wednesday, first of all, take note that there is a later start time than usual for Mike McCarthy's regular Wednesday press conference, which is, you know, typically the first work day of the week. The team's one day off of the week that they get is on Tuesday, so they're coming back to work today. And on a rather regular basis, or at least since training camp ended, you know, since the regular season began, Mike McCarthy has been having his Wednesday press conferences pretty regularly at about 10:30 a.m. And I don't know what the reason is today. This has gone for reasons unpublished by the Packers organization. All they do is publish the time on their website. They don't explain why. But 12:45 p.m. On Wednesday will be Mike McCarthy's press conference. He usually has press conferences before practice. Assuming the practice schedule didn't change, this is going to come after practice. I don't know why. But just if you're like me and you want to hear what the coach has to say and kind of give an update and on the status of the team, it's going to come a few hours later than usual on a Wednesday here. But, you know, one other thing we're looking for today I think people will be interested to see is, you know, the Packers released their first injury report of the week as well. And I think there's two players in particular that people really be looking at. And that's two starters on the defensive side of the football and two guys who've played in the Pro Bowl before. Linebacker Clay Matthews and cornerback Sam Shields, who we talked about earlier. But both these guys sustained injuries during the Packers' last game against the Broncos, albeit to different extents, you know, whereas Sam Shields exited the game and never returned with a shoulder injury. I think somebody mentioned, I don't know if it was on the broadcast, that was to the AC joint in the shoulder, which is kind of becoming the injury du jour, if you will, for the Packers this year, with Randall Cobb suffering it, Nick Perry suffering the same injury, now apparently Sam Shields. And Clay Matthews, again, you know, different extents. He actually came back to the game after suffering an ankle injury. He got rolled up on. But you kind of wonder about their status. And, you know, you want the Packers to be at 100% for the upcoming game here against the Carolina Panthers. Obviously, a big game against an undefeated team. So it'll be interesting to see if they practice, and if they do, you know, what kind of status are they in? Are in that full participation? Are they that limited participation or not at all? You know, maybe the Packers err on the side of caution here and are just like, well, you know, let's take our time with them and try to get them ready for Sunday. I don't know what they'll do, but that's what I'm interested in seeing here. You know, in addition to a couple other guys, Quentin Rollins left the game, didn't come back. You know, this past week, Ty Montgomery couldn't even play in the game. He was on the inactive list. Where's he at? So all these things looking forward to later in the day. So we'll find that out. That'll be Wednesday afternoon sometime when they release their injury report, or, you know, sometimes the beat reporters most of the time release some post-practice reports. We'll find out. But that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening to the show. Thank you to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com for joining us today. Glad to get his perspective as usual. My call to action, if you've not done so already, please give us a rating on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. The show that is, you know, no subscription, no paywall. It's free of charge. That's the one small thing we ask in return. If you could give us a rating, give us a brief review. Nobody's looking for you to write a novel. But we'd really appreciate it. And with that, we'll see you later, folks. We'll see you again on Friday, where we'll do a more extensive job of looking forward to the Carolina Panthers game. We'll see you then, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition of the show, on demand and podcasted later in the day. We'll see you, folks. I leave you today with a song called Valley of the Jig by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go Pack Go.